This is Wild Lives. I'm Mary Brophy. If you've been tuned in over the last few weeks, you'll know I've been exploring Donegal's fantastic wildlife and habitats, and I've been meeting the passionate amateurs and professionals who monitor or protect these wild creatures. Today is the final episode in the current series, and first, I'm visiting one of the most important wildlife sites in the country. Sheskenmore Loch Nature Reserve is over 1,000 acres of sand dunes, lake, macaire and marshland that lies between Kilturish Loch and Ballinreevy Strand. It's a protected site because it supports so many rare and endangered plant species and birds.
Like 30 years ago, the wildlife there was bought 2 farms here.
That's farmer Seamus McGlinchey.
And these 2 farms are in between, or 2 farms, so... But we farmed the land the same as normal since they bought it. So
Seamus is the 3rd generation of his family to farm here, and he gave me a bit of a history of the place.
Farming the land, when you live on the land, you know what it needs and you know how to work it. You know.
Do you enjoy the wildlife here?
I do, yeah. I've always, you know, the geese and the wunter. You knew the wunters when you heard them overhead, and it's a nice spot. It's kind of wild, but I like it. This time of year here in this area, those 5 farmers had their spuds for the year and their vegetables because they grew well on the sandy ground. So there was a hive of activity here. If you were here 30 years ago today, there could be 30 people working around here. It entices the birds to come. But when the system was changed to this new system, it seems to have the farmers left it and the wildlife also left.
Emer McGee joins us on the old potato field, which is now a species-rich meadow. She's the wildlife ranger who monitors and manages this incredible place. Emer and Seamus have fostered a great working relationship. After all, this is in many ways a shared landscape. They regularly chat about what will get the best outcomes for the protected species here.
But it still needs a bit of drainage at times to keep it, you know.
Stop the rushes from taking over.
Well, you know, there's wetlands and, you know, I don't think if it was too wet it's any good to manor base.
And you look at the SPA for here, like it's quite a big boundary, you know, around the loch basically. And you go, well, the geese don't use the whole SPA area, but what you're giving them is this big, huge buffer that they do need to be quite... They do seem to be, you know, only comfortable staying for a long time somewhere where they're mostly undisturbed.
Yeah. They like the quiet and the peace, but they also like the sweet grass.
I head off with Emer to explore some more of the reserve.
So we're just going to go into the little bird hide on the edge of Sheskenmore Loch, and this is really great in the winter for gives you a nice bit of shelter, and you're hidden. Your birds will quickly forget about you if they did notice you making your way in.
A tiny little bunker here,
yes.
And we can just about
fit.
We can just about stand up.
Usually, I'm here. I've never been here with anyone else before. So I saw Hooper swans last week, which would have come from Iceland. And what should be arriving now is the geese, the Greenland white-fronted geese that come from East Greenland. This is Seamus's land, the bird hide is on, and they have this little green strip, which is a favourite place for them to feed and hang out. This is his land we're overlooking. You can see there's an electric fence up, so we put the electric fence up about... 2 weeks ago, and that was just so to give the ground, give it like a little boost, put a little bit of fertiliser on it, and it's really, I suppose, like that, trying to make a big attractive dinner plate for the geese. Actually, I think I see the geese now, just over there at the side of the lake. Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's actually quite a few. They've only arrived in the last couple of days. They're really, really shy, very wary, real wild geese, the Greenland white-fronted geese. But what's interesting about these, this is quite a small flock, is these are almost like a remnant of the really wild geese that originally the Greenland white-fronted geese would have mostly been on our bogs in, you know, 40 or 50 years ago, and that this is still part of that kind of wild habit of using these really remote places. Can you see them?
They're right down on the edge.
Yeah.
right down on the edge. Is there? I can't see there, but is there any young?
They're not. They're really, really low productivity, and it has actually been a problem. One of the theories that has been investigated is that they've been outcompeted at their breeding sites in Greenland by Canada geese, I think.
All those shifts and flows
in
nature.
And it's like that, so we can do as much as we can. We're just talking there about the electric fences up to keep the cattle away from that patch that they like grazing on, and we've sweetened it, and this whole is several hundred hectares designated here for them, so we can do whatever we do as much as we can for them to get them through their winter period of their life, but like that,
you're not controlling the environment elsewhere.
Does
that then influence the management of Sheskin Moor, that if you're trying to attract species?
Well we do debate here with Sheskin Moor. It's designated as a special protection area for geese, but it is also part of a special area of conservation, and it is an extensive sand dune system. So it is also managed for botany, botanically, for the plants here. And there can be a conflict of interest of how do you manage for everything. And so if geese have also become used to, we're talking about Greenland white-fronted geese used to use bog sites, and they are now going more towards what's at the Wexford Slobs and what's around the Swilly, well-fertilised, re-sown fields. What we're not doing here is fertilising or reseeding, because
that doesn't suit the
botany.
You can't have both wildfires.
We're not. And I think in the past here, and I know we were talking about that to Seamus, I think in the past year it would have been more intensively farmed, and so it probably did suit the geese better that way. So I mean, but overall, it's still a good story goose wise. The numbers in Donegal aren't dropping, but their distribution has changed.
Sheskin Moor is also renowned for its macair. Macair is a fertile sandy plain that forms at the back of fixed dune systems in the exposed coasts of Ireland and Scotland, making it one of the rarest wildlife habitats in Europe. Traditionally, these were farmed lightly, with cattle grazed only for a few months of the year, which allowed both botanical and bird life to flourish.
We don't have a lot of macair in Ireland. We have it between North Donegal and Galway. But where we do get it, it is mostly used, because it is a flat, free-draining, sandy ground near the coast. It's used for grazing. It's used for golf courses. Brilliant. Yeah. Football pitch. You know, it's ideal. So it tends to have, unfortunately, been managed where it's losing its botanical value, or even if the botanics are still there, they're not getting a chance to flower.
And as we're walking through here, I mean, it's a little short grass, but it's all over the sand here. We're walking on the top of a dune.
Certainly when we get onto the footbridge, we'll be able to see the macair even better. Probably the best patch of it that's here. So what you can actually see is you can still see some marum here, the bent or marum grass, and that's an indication of blown sand is still coming into this area here. And very shortly, as you can see, another 50 metres and we'll be away from marum grass, will all be behind us, and we'll be on the kind of flat sandy plain.
These are the fixed dunes here then behind us.
Yeah.
I mean, for you, are these equally as interesting?
Yes, they are. Yeah. I love the flowering species that you get in sand dune systems. I do think, you know, when you get fixed dune and macair, they have the most beautiful sequence of flowers that aren't particularly rare, but that you get a lovely mixture of natural wildflowers here. And come June through to the end of August, you get a lovely sequence of colours as well, you know, where something like it might start off as yellows, where it might just be like that, it's the bulbous buttercup and you get lots of it, and then eye brights, but it's lots of them, so you're getting these lovely flushes of whites, yellows, and then as it's purples with the dog violets and pansies. And then later on, there's never a simple answer. You're always just trying to work out what the equilibrium should be.
I really enjoyed meeting Emer and Seamus and my trip to Sheskin Moor. If you haven't been there yet, it is a lovely place to bring the family, winter or summer. You can find out more on the National Parks and Wildlife website. You're listening to Wild Lives. I'm Mary Brophy. We're ending this current series in a very special place, just west of Donegal town. It's late autumn, the first grass frosts are way off, and I'm standing near the end of St. John's Point. It's a unique peninsula that stretches out like a long, bony finger into Donegal Bay.
The light at this place is truly amazing.
That's ecologist Rafe Shepherd.
I never ever see the Sligo Mountains from South Donegal without the light being sort of special. I don't know what it is about Donegal Bay that generates it, but maybe it's because St. John's Point sticks so far out into the bay that we're not clogged up with the clouds that seem to dominate. Well, we're now down at the end of St. John's Point, facing across to Benbulbin and the Sligo Mountains. We've come across the cattle grid onto the open landscape at the bottom of the point, which is all natural vegetation, a mixture of limestone pavement and fen and dry grassland. It's a landscape that really is more akin to what you expect in the Burren and County Clare than in the sort of acid wet northwest.
And I can see we're standing on a little bit of a cliff here, and just right beside us and falling away is evidence of the rock coming through the peat.
Yes, the limestone rocks, which are even brighter than usual because they're coated in lichens. And they look very bright sticking out from the dark grassland. And the grassland itself that we're walking on is really quite distinctive. It's full of tussocks that were created by the yellow ant, the species that is characteristic of the limestone grassland. So we'll go over the edge of this little cliff. It's only a few metres high.
So why have I come here, and why is Rafe leading me over the edge?
What I'm hoping to see are some of the plants that Henry Chichester Hart found well over 100 species he found for the first time in Donegal.
So over 100 years ago, Donegal botanist Henry Chichester Hart walked this very same path. He was a remarkable character who spent decades exploring the county. Most of the beautiful flowers and plants he found weren't previously recorded, because Donegal was deemed too remote by the botanists who were based in the cities. Hart decided to do something about that. In 1898, he published his meticulous flora of County Donegal and put the county on the botanical map.
We're here particularly because one group where he found some especially rare ones, nationally rare ones, would be on the limestone. The base level here at the point is a series of ridges and little hollows in between, and we're in one of the hollows now where the ground is a little bit soggy and it's actually fen, and you can see all sorts of specialist wetland species. And so what have we got here? That is the remains of the grass of Parnassus, a beautiful starry white flower which really lights up the landscape here when it's in full bloom in August and early September. Here is the dead stem of an orchid,
yeah,
of a known species with the little seed pods on it.
Mm.
But orchids are one of the glories of this location because there is a great diversity of them, and some of them are extremely rare. The narrow-leaved marsh orchid, for example, grows here in abundance at one of its best sites. And also the very beautiful marsh helleborine. So we're rising now up out of the fen. We've still got the tussocks of grasses and sedges around us.
But more of the limestone is becoming evident again.
The ground underneath our foot is solid.
There's a lovely spine of limestone here that was probably put into some form of boundary. It runs along, it's lovely.
Yes, this is it looks almost natural, but
doesn't it? Yeah,
it's an old wall.
Yeah,
but we're now just walking into something that's different again. This is an area where the limestone is in much greater abundance, and as we walk, it becomes almost dominant. It's now footsteps through the grassland.
Why is this particularly special?
It's special because it requires a very special plant to grow in an area where there's very little soil, but where there is a very high pH, very low level of acidity. And this is a harsh climate. It can be wet, but it will dry out very quickly. So drought can be a problem.
Yeah.
And many of the common species that dominate the countryside and farmland in general will find it tough to make a living here. They like it soft. And because they find it tough, the specialist species can have space to grow. And here we have one of them. It's a thistle, but a curiously straw-coloured thistle. This is called Caroline thistle, and it's one of the ones that Hart found for the first time. Hart was a very interesting man. He had a science degree, but he was well enough off to not have to work for a living. So he decided to be an amateur scientist rather than a professional. But he was a very good amateur scientist, and he tramped the highways and byways of Donegal and the mountains of Ireland, and a fair bit around the world as well. And he recorded plants everywhere that he went. But he recorded one particular group of plants that stand as a great memorial to him today, and those are the Arctic alpines. And part of the reason for this, of course, that he was an excellent climber, and he had no problem scaling the cliffs of Slieve League, where the greatest concentration of rare alpine plants in Ireland is to be found. Most of the botanical exploration was done within reach of major centres. Dublin, obviously, Galway, Connemara was well covered, Killarney was another centre of exploration. But there was nothing really to attract people up to Donegal. It was a little bit too far, and there wasn't a sort of an intellectual base from which they could operate. But that pattern actually has stayed. And so Galway developed an expertise in natural history that is still present in the university and still draws people into Connemara. And Donegal is still relatively neglected. This is a plant called spindle or spindleberry, which has a beautiful little pink fruit, a fleshy pink fruit with an orange centre.
Okay.
This is a limestone-loving bush that doesn't occur elsewhere in Donegal. And it's here growing in the cracks between the limestone pavement. Because there's so little soil for it to grow on, it doesn't grow very big. And being stuck out into Donegal Bay, the wind will chop it down anyway.
And completely surrounded by that beautiful carpet of the thyme.
Yeah, it's so we're surrounded
masses.
By so much else. So that's two of Hart's plants. Let's take a wee wander and see if we can find some more.
The plants Hart recorded in his book had grown here for millennia, but today,
quite a few of the plants that Hart recorded are now extinct in the country, in the county, but most of them are still there at the same place if you go and look for them hard.
Is that why, in a contemporary sense, that it's so important, that it told us what we had so we know what we're losing now?
These baseline studies are so important at measuring trends into the future. You can see the decline of the agricultural weeds across Britain and Ireland wholesale. The plants like cornflower and corncockle that were all common weeds around plots of potatoes or vegetables and even in grain fields.
And why are we losing them?
Changes in agriculture. Agriculture is now so efficient it doesn't leave space for weeds. They can be eliminated quite easily by weed killers, but also by more efficient harvesting that doesn't give them a chance to reproduce. Cowslip is no longer found in Donegal. It's one of the ones that seems to have gone extinct. It was never abundant. It was always rare here, but it seems to have faded away. And that might be a climate thing, but it's more likely an agricultural one. The arrival of the digger had an enormous impact, but also grant schemes that encouraged farmers to drain wet hollows on their land. And they eliminated a lot of habitats for specialist species. At the moment, their best line of defence would be the presence of the special areas of conservation.
A complete limestone carpet. It's, and right in between all these crevices, there's something clinging. Life is clinging on.
And there's something about the limestone blocks that we're walking on. It encourages you to tiptoe through the landscape, and that encourages you to look at it in more detail. You have to look at it in detail because things are hidden down little holes. And, you know, it's an open grassland landscape where the wind would normally cut bush growth away, and yet down in these holes, the solution holes between the blocks of limestone, you can get woodland species growing
really
very happily. And we'll look for some of these now. We've got more. Yeah, here. We've got more of the spindle bush. But here in this relatively deep hole, we've got hart's tongue fern. Now, the hart is not Henry Chichester. It's hart as in the female deer.
Yes, and it is an absolutely massive specimen.
Yeah,
it's quite big.
Lovely big lush plant. And that is a plant that grows usually in deep shade in woodland.
It's true, yeah. Well, we've been talking about some of them that have gone extinct, like the cowslip here in Donegal. One that did survive was the globe flower.
Yes.
Quite an attractive...
A beautiful globe flower is really a buttercup, but it's a very big, beautiful buttercup cup where the petals are curled round into the shape of a globe.
Mm.
And as well as being very beautiful, it grows in very specialised habitats. But here in Donegal, it grows mostly on the edges of streams and lakes. I decided I would try and find it because at the time there were only a couple of recorded locations. And as I knew one of those, I thought, well, I'll start from there. And I explored and I found traces of it along some of the main east flowing river courses. At that point, I got hold of Hart's book and I discovered, of course, that he'd been there before me and had found them all before. And there they were, still hanging on at the same locations.
120 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the fruit of the spindleberry, the lovely pink fleshy fruits. And when they open, they've got an orange centre, but they're, at the moment they're still closed.
It's like a tiny little pumpkin or something.
It's exactly like a pumpkin, yes.
And but it's a beautiful red colour. Absolutely so attractive there.
Yeah, sort of coral pink.
Absolutely. And against the grey of the limestone, it's just the most perfect combination. Nice way to end our trek through this landscape. Well, that draws this odyssey to an end. We hope you've enjoyed the series. And from me and all the team, we'd like to thank everyone who took part in Wild Lives and helped us appreciate the beauty and amazing diversity of wildlife right here on our doorstep in Donegal. So go on, put your boots on, get out there and begin your own Wild Lives. Wild Lives is produced and edited by Neil Boyle. It is a Hollybrook production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, with the television licence fee.